You're listening to Burning Bridges with Margo, and I'm your fire starter, Margo Avedish. And
yay!
We have a very special show for you. It's a show of hope because, you know, the election just happened a little over a week, and it pretty much stunned the U.S. as well as the world. Trump's already broken some of his campaign promises. I mean, he's already hired lobbyists and political insiders as part of his team, and he was supposed to be draining the swamp. Almost half the country voted for him, and they did for a reason. It could have been a positive reason, like they wanted to disrupt the status quo, or a nefarious reason like racism or sexism. Regardless, this show is named Burning Bridges for a reason. Because sometimes we burn a bridge thinking it's terrible, but let me find out later, it was actually a blessing in disguise. I have hope that maybe this election is an example, because with everyone so riled up today, maybe we can turn that into a positive thing. You know, we can all come together and this could maybe be a positive. So this show is about solutions regarding the state of the country and getting involved politically at a local level. And we have some amazing, amazing people on the show today. We are joined by Miss Robin Laverne Wilson, also known as Dragonfly. She was handpicked for the Green Party and just ran for the New York Senate candidate in the last election. And she's been on the show before. You could totally check out her interview on iTunes coming soon.
And I can't wait to burn another bridge.
And then we have also Layla Tabatabai, who is an attorney and tech founder. She interned 2 years for Senator Robert Casey in Pennsylvania and served a two-year term in 2013 as a member of the Democratic County Committee for the 65th Assembly District of New York County. And then we have another now stranger to the show, Elisa Lutz. She is founder of Hero Backpacks. She's also joined with partners for the Public Foundation and United Nation. It's all about carry your courage, carry your cause. And leading the discussion is Lindsay Tabis. She works with product leaders and entrepreneurs to tackle their hardest challenges and creative problem solving. And I'm going to let her kick it off today to frame the problem so we can come together and find a solution. And please follow along at home. Lindsay?
Hey, guys. All right, awesome. So thank you so much for joining today and for having me. I'm super excited to be on this conversation and really start framing problems and identifying solutions. I just want to kind of introduce the process before we get started. You know, a lot of people are really eager to jump to propose solutions right now. But, you know, the more time we spend with research and data, the more time we spend with problems, understanding them fully, the more innovative and creative our solutions are going to be. Something like 95% of innovation comes from truly understanding problems before we craft solutions. So today is a structured brainstorming session where we will kind of kick off with like a statement about what's going on and focus on a topical area this time. Getting involved in local and state government. We'll spend time kind of brainstorming all the possible problems, and then we'll spend some time looking at those problems to identify solutions that can really have a lasting impact. So I'm going to start with framing the problem. Does anyone have any questions before we begin?
No, I think we're good.
There's just a statement that I would like to give,
okay,
because I think it's very important that we clear the air about a few things.
Okay.
Because I think it's important that we acknowledge that there's two major battles ahead of us. One is legislative, because we just finished an election, but equally important is the cultural battle on all fronts. So what we've just attempted to do to make change is top down, that changes laws, but that clearly does not change hearts and minds. And that's where the grassroots up approach is. And I think it's incredibly important that we spend just as much time dealing with addressing the culture, especially what we just experienced in the studio, a room full of women, and you know, there was some negative energy. So I think it's important that we talk about sexism and racism and how all of those issues intersect with all of the issues that we are trying to address. I just felt it was very important to put that out there.
I think coming from a lower level of what we can do in the community opposed to like the top level is a very important point. Thank you for making that.
Mm-hmm.
Lindsay, do you want to read your statement?
Yeah, I'm ready. That's a great input, and I think that when we get to thinking about the solutions, we can talk about what top down.
Back up a little bit.
We just had a technical glitch. Can you please repeat the last phrase you had?
So I think that was directed to me. I was saying when we get to the solution part of this exercise, we can talk through all of your great points as far as what solutions look like from the cultural perspective, legislative perspective, solutions that are top down as well as bottom up. We definitely want a holistic and systemic approach, and everyone's going to have kind of a different area where they feel their strengths can best be applied. So let me tell you, this morning I saw a short article in USA Today saying that over half of protesters arrested in an anti-Trump rally in Oregon had not voted. Over the past 10 days, as Amargo kicked us off, many of us have become perplexed about what to do with a Trump presidency. We have urges to solve problems and new ideas to tackle challenges our nation is facing. There are so many people throwing good, bad, and mediocre solutions out there. People are hungry for next steps. There are broad stroke problem areas like financial security, financial insecurity, isolation in the real world, progressives living in cities, conservatives in more rural areas. There's misinformation and difficulty of assessing the quality of information, particularly online in our social media networks. But what is most alarming is the lack of involvement and knowledge of our local and state governments. So the question posed to everyone on like listening and as well as on our panel is, why does this happen? So one of the things I want to do right now is take a pause and each of us over the next 3 minutes write down as many problems and causes that got us here today. They can be big, they can be small. We really want to focus on the problems and have a discussion on the problems and the causes that got us to the point today that we have this lack of involvement and knowledge of our local and state governments.
So you want us to write down our the problems with what's going on, why people are not involved?
Right.
Okay.
So they can be personal, they can be perceived. You can just relate back to things that you've heard other people say over the past 10 days. Maybe you want to think about why didn't people vote, but they're interested in protesting. Why we don't see a lot of Generation Xers running for political positions. There's a lot of different perspectives you can take on this situation.
Sure, I'll throw one out there, that their vote doesn't matter, that it doesn't really count.
Yeah. So what I want to encourage you to do is try to write all of these, write as many ideas down in the next, like, 2 minutes. I have a timer running. I'd love for the audience and everyone out there listening to also do the same. And if you happen to be listening with other people, that's even better, because you guys can talk amongst yourselves.
Everyone's diligently writing here in the studio.
Well, we're taking notes.
That is awesome. And you know what? I'll give a plug. If you want to tweet at Margo with an X, We can see it come up on Twitter. You could also tweet Radio Free Brooklyn. It's Radio Free BK if you have ideas as well. We're coming up on like maybe 1 minute left. Try to push yourself to get to 10 problems. And don't judge yourself. Like, if they're small, they're small. If they're big and meaty, that's awesome. Think about any problems and causes or why you personally aren't involved, why your friends aren't involved, what questions you have about having a job in politics.
So this is not just about voting, it's about getting involved in politics too.
Yeah, right. So on election day, I drove a few older women to the polls, and one of the women from a local kind of DNC committee said that she was having problems recruiting younger people to help out at the county level. So, you know, why is that happening? Take another 15 more seconds.
Everyone's finishing up here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
So, anyone want to volunteer to go first?
Robin, do you, since you were just recently involved in this election?
Well, the thing, I honestly didn't make an actual list because the work that I already do as an artist and activist is so intersectional. And also, to give full disclosure, since this is a radio show and nobody knows what we look like, but I'm a Black woman, so the experience that I live in intersects with so many different issues that I don't think I need to choose.
Right. So I think that's amazing because we're all going to bring different perspectives, and we're going to see even more intersections, and we're going to see trends bubble up to the top. So what the process looks like is that we'll start with one person. They'll read off their 10. We'll go to the next person, and they'll read off their 10, but we'll try to figure out, I'll start bucketing on a piece of paper and taking notes kind of where the similarities are so we can start to frame like our short list. So if you could give us, you know, like 10 bullet points, and they might, you know, like from your perspective, and don't hold back, don't be shy, we'll collect them and we'll start to kind of bring them together.
I have a couple of, I think there's kind of like any issue, I think there's a lot of reasons why something happens. I've just pinpointed a few, and I'll just say them broadly, and then if anyone wants to jump in. For one thing, even while saying the statement, it's kind of like an obvious, but there is not enough media attention given to midterm elections or state and local elections. I mean, we all know this, but when it's the divide is so great that people, I can bet you right now, if you did one of those like grab people on the streets kind of performances, most people can't list their senators. People can't even list what representative represents them in the district that they live in, or even list like even two random ones that are in the House now. There's just not an awareness because the media just doesn't care. And that really feeds into, I mean, this ties directly into the presidential elections, because if nobody knows who's at their local and state government, they automatically assume the federal government is responsible for every good and every grievance, which doesn't make any sense because that's not how our government works. So I think that's one thing. The media also, when they do give coverage, they never cover it in a way that creates an emotional connection. And I think that's one thing that Robin was saying before when we were speaking, even before. It's really, the coverage is dry. It doesn't tie into how a person's history of making decisions directly affects certain communities. So it ends up being more like statistics, and then it just kind of goes away forever. I can list two more unless it feels like I'm overgoing. No, keep going? Okay.
So if I am hearing correctly, there's this kind of bucket of like, there's not enough media attention to midterm and local elections. If it's like, there's awareness of midterm and local elections as well as awareness of midterm and awareness of local reps. And media is one of the problems in the sense that we really rely on them for that awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good way to summarize it.
Okay.
In addition to that, for example, the position that I ran for years ago, I think it was last year that it ended, and I didn't renew or anything. The way I even knew that there was an open seat in local elections in New York City was because I was a part of the Manhattan Young Democrats, and they have a program specifically designed to engage millennials and young people who should run for office or should run for a position. And if it was not for that group, I would still not know about most of these programs. And there's an astounding number of local seats that are open every single election that don't go filled, or those that are elected are then able to fill them the way that they want. There's certain rules that apply. So I think many, many people just aren't aware of those either. And then I would say, lastly, the concept of also responsibility to local and state governments is very abstract. There was like a great article that was written in Roll Call, I think this past week, that kind of talked about where was the bubble. Was it in cities? Was it in rural areas? That author was someone who was from a rural area that then moved to Washington, D.C., and his argument was that the bubble was actually in rural America. That's not exactly the point I want to make, but his point was, when an idea is abstract and people can't connect to it, it's kind of like saying, so when you say this harms like women's rights, like to most people, a lot of people, if they're not a woman, they have no idea what that actually means. And his kind of analogy for that was, it's like telling them that you're taking rights away from Kleons, which is a Star Trek reference. You know, it doesn't, even though it's real people on this planet, you would think like, how can you not make that logical leap? But realistically, that's how the brain functions. If there isn't someone that they love and care about that belongs to a certain community or class, like, it's just a complete abstraction, never becomes grounded. And I think that has a lot to do with it as well.
Hi.
I cede the floor. That's all I have.
So I wanted to capture, so there's open seats and there's an astounding number that go unfilled. And I want to relate that in the suburbs of Philadelphia where I voted, our local state representative, the Republican representative, Frank Ferry, ran uncontested. So there wasn't even a Democratic candidate to run against him, let alone any third-party candidates as well. So I definitely think, you know, knowing that there's open seats, knowing that the political parties need candidates to run is one problem. But there's also, would you agree that there's a perception or misperception about what it means to be a, like, hold political office and what, you know, the consequences or rewards of running for office actually are?
Yeah, what's the, like, time constraints?
Yeah, I mean, if you're on the very lowest of the low local level, the requirements are almost negligible. I mean, if you're an entrepreneur, you work like 14 to 16 hours a day, you can easily hold that and also be in public office. I'm talking about the lowest of the low, like the literally, like, just barely.
The dog catcher.
Yeah. You just barely have to qualify, basically. And it's basically what happens is once you do get into that position, there's just, I think meetings are very, very few. It's like once a quarter or something. If you're in New York, everybody piles into this little mini theater, and there's like a massive banner that says like Democrats, and it's supposed to be really unifying. Probably same thing with Republicans. And basically there's an itemization sheet on what's going to happen on that agenda. And then everybody kind of like in, you know, old school, as you know it, everyone says like yay or nay to a motion, but the truth is that many times those motions are kind of already decided before you get in there. And that's one of the reasons why I stopped being in local government, because I thought it was a broken system or can be deeply remedied. I think Robin can probably speak better as to the different status, since I was in the lowest of the low position.
Oh, I don't know why you think I can be the authority. Never my idea to run for senator. I was asked directly by the Green Party. So this has been, it's sort of been like my political deflowering, so to speak. losing my electoral virginity. And so as a result, I'm also still very much learning. And part of it is not just acknowledging the ignorance that most of us have. I can't tell you how many times people would say like, oh, I don't know if I can vote for you. What district? New York. No, but what district? The state of New York. So, but yeah, I also think that it's very important for us to establish a relationship with our elected leaders as well, and literally program their numbers, their phone numbers, into our phones, and and to actually call them directly rather than email them, rather than vent on Facebook where it really does no good and does nothing, but actually write them a letter by hand and to actually call them with the same enthusiasm that we post on Facebook.
But does that do anything?
Oh, I'll give one, sorry, I just want to clarify one thing. Like, if you're at the local level like I was, you actually don't, some of those positions you have to be elected. But for example, my position, you just had to get the requisite number of requisite number of signatures in your district. And the rules are actually really strict, especially I was in a district that's very transient. I live in the financial district, and it actually is predominantly students that don't normally live there, as well as expats, I guess you could say. They come in for a few projects in the finance sector, and then they leave. So that was actually really challenging. But so there are some positions that you don't actually have to go campaign. You just have to get the proper amount of signatures within your district. The Board of Elections will then approve it. Depending on what party you're in, the opposite side will try to contend it or not, but it's really that easy.
So I want to go back to this idea that we're lacking a relationship with elected officials. And I heard Margo ask, does that really do anything? One of the problems that I thought about was that even though the internet has made it easy to figure out who your rep is and call them about a certain cause or email them about a certain cause, it's very impersonal. It's pretty opaque. No one knows if these calls really have an impact. So I think that, you know, if someone can get over the hurdle of knowing who their local rep is, the next step is, like, how do I actually have a meaningful dialogue with that person? Or by the time they are elected, are they now in the pocket of, you know, lobbyists and corporations, and they're not going to care what I have to say? So I think that that is kind of another problem, is that, you know, we don't have the relationship, and if we try to have it, it's pretty opaque as to what it is.
And I know for a fact, because I actually set up a ton of meetings with Congress on Capitol Hill, if you're a constituent, they have to see you. So if you want to go to D.C., you can set up a meeting with them. Whether or not you're going to actually talk to the congressperson or their... It's not assistant. They have
staff members.
Yeah, one of their staff members. That is, you know, maybe not. So you could actually go and talk to them. And a lot of them you can even get meetings with if you're not a constituent. Just like the really popular ones, like Bernie Sanders. You probably are not going to be able to get a meeting with him if you're not one of his constituents or with his people. But you can do that. But I don't know if that sways them. I did it about Bitcoin. I didn't really see them change anything on Bitcoin, but
well, there might be other reasons.
A couple of things about that on the campaign trail. I can't tell you how many times I heard from people that they attempted to reach Chuck Schumer, and he deliberately ignored them. So yeah. Your Bitcoin story is not surprising. The other thing is that there was an article in on Attention. They how to make your congressman listen to you. And Emily Ellsworth was a former congressional staff member, and she gave her experience and observations. And I'm reading her tweets directly. She said, "But phone calls, that was a thing that shook up our office from." Time to time. One time a radio host gave out the district office phone number on air about the immigration policy and told our constituents to call, and they did all day long, and all they did was answer phones. And so as a result, when they start getting a pattern of calls, they actually have to log them and respond to them, whereas emails just get batched up into an algorithm and are pretty much impersonalized.
Yeah, actually, so when I was an intern for the senator for 2 years in Pennsylvania, and that's actually exactly what I did. Anybody who calls and makes a grievance, it actually is logged in a special system the government uses. I don't know about emails because I feel like I just never saw those. And I don't know if it's just the where I lived, everybody was calling in. But yeah, every single person that called, we had to find out what their name was, where they lived, all the details, and it all went into a database.
Isn't that another problem in itself, though? Like, the antiquated systems that the government runs on, they're not transparent, right? You don't know where that data went, what they're doing with that data, if they're actually acting on it. Can your local representative be persuaded to vote differently than the party line if enough of their constituents call in? I think that could be part of the problem in building a relationship with your elected officials, that not knowing what the best avenue is. So it seems like phone calls are the best avenue over, you know, tweeting and Facebook posts and emails. There's a disconnect in the technology that, like, the younger generations want to use to connect with their local reps, and the technology that the local reps actually have at their fingertips.
Yeah, sure. I will say one, there is a branch of, I think they're still considered part of the government, but the Open Data Initiative is one that I feel like tons of people don't know. I didn't know about, the only reason I know about it is because I had one of the leaders of the movement, or maybe even pioneers of the movement, as a professor. And what they're doing, I think, is so critical. Having this, like, transparency initiative where all the data that the government does collect should be published. If you go to, I think it's, I can't remember. They swap the URLs all the time. But almost all of the open data that you found is because of that group. It's because they're the ones who've been saying, and like any data that the government has, even like beyond census, should be available for people to use. I think weather is also considered that as well.
That website is data.gov. I just looked it up.
Thanks, Lindsay.
So I wanna go over to Alyssa. Do you have your list of problems?
I do. I took a little bit more of a I took a little bit more of a human rights standpoint, but it's actually interesting to tie this into the conversation that we're having, because a lot of the things I'm concerned about is, how do we stop ripples of hate from spreading through society? How do we set a positive example for our children? How do we keep millennials engaged and active in becoming human rights leaders? Women's rights, environmental rights, minority rights, marriage equality, religious freedom, safety for the LGBT community. And I think, it was interesting talking about local politicians and local politics and understanding who your local officials are. In my research, I've found that, a lot of my concerns are education related, and surprisingly to me, on a federal level, there's actually less impact that those officials can create than your, local officials within education. So I think there's a disconnect between not only understanding who the local officials are, but also specifically which category and which level is the correct place for your issues and your concerns, and where to go to voice those.
That's a really great framing of that question, because we heard it before, as far as little knowledge of what the federal government's responsible for versus what the state is responsible for. And then for your specific issues, which kind of government is the best to go to. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm wondering if any of you, if this crossed anyone's mind, but I remember, I spent my 20s in San Francisco and the later 20s in New York, as well as my early 30s. And I felt that, I was not involved or connected to the community there. That a lot of young people, see themselves as tourist inhabitants in their cities. In the city that they've chosen to live in their 20s, and so it doesn't seem worthwhile to get involved. And then there's kind of an inflection point once you buy a house or you have a child where you have more skin in the game, so now you want to get more involved in politics. Is that a problem you guys have seen?
So is
that disconnect?
I used to live in San Francisco, and it was crazy to me how no one got involved with anything. It's like in your face, everyone is trying to solve these business problems, but no one's trying to solve the social problems. And then I moved to New York, and I don't know what it is about New York, but I see communities getting involved all the time. Like my last apartment, we had a former police officer who lived there, and he like knew everything that was going on in the building. We'd all go to him. He would like on our behalf call if we didn't have heat, and I felt like a community, and we all texted each other and like knew what was going on. And it's funny you say that about the house thing, because one of my best friends has a condo, and they shut the roof down because they were doing construction at a building next door, and she couldn't go to the board meeting, and she asked me to go for her. So I was actually at a board meeting with all these other people, and they all had, you know, owned part of this property, so it mattered to them, and it mattered to me because I wanted to go on the roof. But but I definitely see how that could make you feel a little bit more skin in the game. And I think if there's a people like an outcry plus the media, because in Washington Square Park there were all these people who were taking some weird new drug that made them kind of like zombies, and the police would just walk by and they were kind of overtaking the park, and all these people started complaining, and then the Post wrote about it, and then it like forced then the police to do something in other services because people were complaining, and now it's like public and everyone can read about it. Whereas in San Francisco, I feel like they try to like hide a lot of the problems. They don't put it in the media so much because they want people to keep going there. It's more of like, let's pretend it doesn't happen. In New York, they're like, this is happening. This is not okay. I live here. Do something about it, and we're going to shame you in the paper.
Okay. What about... So you kind of brought up education, but I think you were talking about something specific. Could you expound on that?
Sure. I think just, making sure that the policies don't affect our education in negative ways, right? So ensuring that we can teach science in all of our classrooms, making sure that all of our students feel safe, whether they're a minority, whatever religious background they have, or if they're from the LGBT community, and making sure and understanding, you know, how can a federal policy affect my state?
There's like go on, Lindsay.
I was just gonna say, I thought of education as an issue from a different perspective. I listened to an NPR segment earlier this fall about that there's a lack of civic duty education, even just teaching your 18-year-olds that are voting for the first time to how to use the voting machines and what to expect their first time going to vote. So there's the kind of, some of this education could be happening, you know, in our schools. And then it also really isn't clear what it means or what is required, and that this came up before, what is required to kind of be a politician and what those jobs are like.
Yeah, I mean, actually just kind of piggybacking off that, if you look at all like the laws that we've crafted as well as how we conduct our elections, like civic duty is absolutely not a priority. For example, we have our elections on a Tuesday instead of doing what like Japan, Germany, and France do and having it on a weekend. Or we can keep it on Tuesday for some if we want to.
National holiday.
Exactly, right. I know, actually, there's a great argument where I actually said that the other day. I said, why not have it on the weekend like these other great countries? And someone was like, oh, well, then people might just go on vacation or something that weekend. Whatever the case may be. But if we have it on a Tuesday, at least it ensures that they have to be in their area for work. But we don't have it that way. We don't have a national holiday. We have really kind of strict voter ID laws. We also have a very tight window in terms of when you can get your absentee ballot in. And then most importantly, I wish we would kind of adopt like the Australian system where if you don't vote, then you have to pay a fine. I know it sounds bad, but Australia is one of the highest turnouts, I think, around the world, just because everybody goes and votes because they don't want to lose money.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have it as a holiday, that won't be an issue.
Or like a tax write-off kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
So before we jump into the solutions, I wanted to see if anyone else had any kind of problems that we haven't discussed yet.
I think we covered what you brought up. We can go to the next one, yeah.
Yeah, let's go to solutions.
Well, can I just bring up one before we move on? I feel like there's, and I read this online, going towards the fact that half of these protesters in Oregon had not voted, but they were willing to go out and protest, there's this kind of also, like, it kind of indicates that people might believe that their time or their ability to have an impact is better done outside the government. And I think that this reflects some negative views, anti-government kind of ideas, is the government being slimy and antagonistic and not the right way to solve problems. So there's a really kind of negative government perspective as far as, is that really the best place to get things done?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why a lot of people voted for Trump, because he was so anti-government. I'm really into, like, Noam Chomsky talks about anarcho-syndicism, and I said that wrong. And it's about, like, you know, worker-owned. And when people have skin in the game, this is, like, why startups work the way they do. When you give people a piece of the company, then they feel part of it. And when we elect these officials, we don't feel part of it. We don't feel like our voice is heard. Or just ignore it because we're so disassociated from it.
Yeah, I would also argue, I mean, the point you bring up, Lindsay, that actually used to be the divide between Democrats and Republicans. Now it's just like a lot more than that. But traditionally it was how much involvement the government's going to have. If you identify or vote as a Democrat, or if you identify as liberal or progressive, you think that government does play a really positive role because we really need that kind of organization to handle a lot of these important things. But if you're on the Republican and Libertarian side, you think that government involvement is actually what's ruining everything. That is still the foundation, though there's been a lot other piled up now that's created a bigger divide.
Right, and I get the role and like the rules that, or the ideals that libertarians and Republicans who preach small government are going for, but somewhere even in their own philosophy, government plays some role and requires some politicians from their parties. So, you know, if we go back to younger people, Gen Xers, you know, from 1964 all the way to young millennials that were born in the late 1990s, aren't running for local elections and aren't getting involved with their local parties because they feel that, like, the government has the inability, like, the government can't do anything, right? Or it feels like a high cost of running, running for a position with very little reward.
Yeah, I think the funny thing is, and this again goes back to blaming federal versus local or state, is when you ask anyone, like, what is the root of the problems? Why haven't we achieved anything in the past 4 years? Everyone who didn't vote for Hillary will say uniformly, it's Obama, it's all these different things. And they totally will bypass that it was a Republican-owned government. That you can't, I get, people have a very misguided way of how our government works. And even though they blocked, like, in a very finite period, like 500 bills, it never went to the Congress that did that. Somehow it always ended up going back to, it's the president's fault, it's the president's party's fault, even though there's absolutely no legal way for him to abide. Well, there is some, but let's not get into executive orders. It'll get crazy in here.
So do you think maybe a solution could be content, like creating fictional movies, but sneak in there how the government actually works. Because, I mean, people are obviously not Googling how does this work, and I don't even know if they teach it in schools anymore. But things that people watch, like, people are really into TV, you know, and movies. I mean, even House of Cards. I think this is what actually happens. You know, they're trading deals with each other in order to get one person to say yes for a bill and not. And are we okay with that if that is true?
My perspective is that they have such a long game, a really deep, long game that transcends country, transcends generations. Everything that's manifesting now has probably been a part of their design for the past 50 years or so. And I think that we, the people, the grassroots, and I know this is challenging because we're still very much in survival mode, and that's also by design. And when you're in survival mode, all you can really do is tunnel your vision and focus on that. So the people also have to long game, right? 5, 10, 15 years from now. And part of it, I believe, starts with running for your local dog catcher. I hope that my run for senator has inspired at least one other person to consider running for office. It wasn't on my bucket list. It fell into my bucket. And as I said earlier, it was the beginning of a social political awakening and realizing even though I am anchored in the grassroots as an artist, it's still urgently important for me to participate in the electoral part of what controls, molds, and shapes my life. With that, what I'm also encouraging people to do is to look around in their community. And if you're not the one who has the ovaries to run for office, look around at who are the community organizers and leaders in your community that you can nominate and say, I want you to be my leader and nurture and support them so that we as the people are from the grassroots pushing up into these positions, the people that we have chosen, not the ones that the corporations and the lobbies have selected.
So as we kind of, you know, get into the last 13 minutes or so of the hour, I wanted to, like, refocus on the solutions, and that was a great transition as far as, you know, if you can't do it yourself, encourage other people to do it as well. I think, Margo, you said this, that with skin in the game, people are more invested and involved. And so one part of the problem that we've talked about is how do people get skin in the game or feel that skin in the game? That can be rooted in the lack of civic duty education. That can be rooted in the fact that not everyone understands what the federal government and what the state government is responsible for. And then when people are more invested and involved, when we elect these officials, we feel ignored, which goes back to kind of the communication between constituents and their representatives. So if you yourself cannot run for a position, how do you actually connect with your representatives, and how do you actually understand that what you're what you believe in and what you would like, how you would like your rep to vote, is actually being, you know, heard? So I'm wondering if, as we've talked about this, if any of you guys have kind of thought about how we build, there seems to be first like an awareness and an education, but there's also kind of a relationship building piece as well between people that are involved in local government and people that may want to be involved with local government.
I have an idea. I don't know, I mean, it would take some organization, but I think it would just need to start with one. Like, okay, what office is available locally? Let's create like a campaign of like nominate someone or nominate yourself, and then create like some sort of viral thing of, you know, because there's so many contests and things going around and like nominating people, or they should, you know, win this award or speak at this thing, and people will be like, hey, vote for me. And so maybe starting something like on social media that then people can post and getting the awareness, like, oh, there's this position. This is what entails. These are people who are like throwing their hat in the ring and kind of trying to pass that around and starting maybe on a more social internet, social media, because that's what the younger generation actually looks at to find news. You know, people aren't going to their, you know, grocery store and reading the pieces of paper that are on the wall. I'm sorry, that's not what our generation's doing. But they are on Facebook, they are on Twitter, they are on Snapchat.
Yeah, actually.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. I love that idea.
Yeah, so I'll just give like a shout out and credit to my dad, because what you said was kind of literally what he's been bugging me to do, which is, he's like, why isn't there something like a political idol? Like, he's like, why don't we just have people on stage, get it really entertainment-wise? I obviously, like, I think anyone who, in academia, I think even saying that, they want to throw up on me for saying that, because it kind of cheapens, basically, government. But given where we are now, it's like, I feel like
I don't know. Reality story, maybe president.
Yeah, we've hit rock bottom, in my opinion. Yeah. So I think it's kind of like, well, you know, now seems like a really good time to start talking about political idol. This is something my dad's been saying for, like, 10 years, and I've always been like, no, or, you know, the dignity of the office, but now that that's pretty much out the window.
I just got a message from a listener, and they said that there's a group in California that does exactly what we're talking about in our show. It's called California Women Lead, and it identifies all the open government positions and finds people, women, to fill the spots.
Awesome. Yeah, they should link up with Manhattan Young Democrats and find out how to do that in every state, because to my knowledge, I mean, the way I found mine was I Googled it. Very, very old school. And there's actually a very lack. I'm so thankful. Thank you guys, whoever just wrote in. I already forgot.
Anna from California.
Nice. In terms of even, I'll give like a small snippet too. I went to a organizational meeting thrown by NOW, National Organization for Women. And the reason I went there, and also Gloria Steinem was there, and that was amazing. But the reason I went there over anywhere else is that was the only place I saw on a Google search result that was having a planning organization meeting this week, like this past week. I didn't find any other organization. So there's really a vacuum in terms of groups that are kind of like addressing these problems.
Yeah, I mean, and it's like, who has really time to go to meetings? Like, let's do like web, you know, streaming things. Yeah. Or I really like this video, you know, or trying to make it viral. And maybe it's getting people who have, you know, influencers who have all these social media following to kind of get involved. Like, let's start, instead of brands harnessing these people, we should start harnessing them to do good and make change. And I don't know, I mean, I don't know if they would be into it or if they had money, but if they're interested in what's going on in this country, then I think it's an easy ask. Like, hey, let's make a video of this position's open, or, you know, vote for your favorite person, or
I don't know. Even like a reality show. Has anyone ever seen a reality show with a bunch of young people who want to run for office?
I actually wrote a joke down about that. I'm like, I do stand-up, I'm working on a stand-up joke, like literally about that, but it's actually...
Yeah, 10 years ago, this would be a bloody joke, right? But now it's like we really have come so, you know, we've... Please, Robin.
Please. Well, I will admit I have mixed feelings about it. And the reason why is because our political arena has turned into a cult of personality.
Yeah.
Rather than a focus on real issues. That's how Trump got elected. I'm sorry, I said his name. Oops, sorry, Drumpf. That's how the orange face got elected. A cult of personality. So as soon as I hear reality show and politics, I think, you know, his show on NBC. And so once again, how do we keep it from being sensationalized, but at the same time, keep making politics sexy? It's got to be sexy now.
Right. We feel like it's cheap, but we can't be corny and hold on to the past way of doing things. We have to look at what is working and, you know, tweak to vote and calling, you know, texting to vote work. One of the things that I just checked sitting here at my computer is I searched within 50 miles of Philadelphia for any meetup on meetup.com that had to do, that had the words politics, political, Democrats. And I'm kind of surprised that meetup as a tool has been around for, you know, 15 years.
What about the Green Party?
And your local Democrat, like DNC committees, aren't or don't have a representation on these websites. And that's a really simple to do if any political officials are out there or any kind of like local, you know, organizing groups is, you know, put your stuff on Meetup because that's a place where, you know, people do look for things to do.
I just want to touch on something that caught my ear from what Margo said earlier about, you know, instead of giving our attention to brands, we should give it to politicians and, you know, the interplay between media and politics. But brands have a voice, and as a social entrepreneur, a budding social entrepreneur, I think that it's actually a responsibility for brands to take a stance for issues and to even give whatever following and lend whatever voice that they've curated to politicians in today's society. And not only that, but to the issues as well as make a financial commitment to upholding them as well. So I think there's an interplay between government, media, brands, and people that needs to occur.
Yeah, I'll piggyback off that, actually, if I can. There's a great, I think voting with your money is now finally becoming in vogue. Especially after this election. So there's a really great resource that Better Minds have put together. It's called Grab Your Wallet. It's a list, I think everyone's shaking their head. So everyone here's heard of it, in case anyone hasn't heard of it who's listening. Grab Your Wallet, if you just type it in, it should be the first hit. Hopefully, Google's been failing asleep recently, but hopefully it's on there. And it'll show you all the places that have done business with Trump or supported his candidacy that you could boycott buying their products. And then it also provides lists of companies that have come out as being very inclusive, as saying that they are going to fight hatred and bigotry no matter what happens. And I vote with my money all the time, and I literally have already deleted 3 apps and downloaded 4 new ones because of this list. So that's another really great resource to have.
Right.
Isn't there a risk there? You know, both my parents are small business owners. My mom has a retail shop. You know, she doesn't want to advertise who she's voting for because that could really hurt her business. There was a local bakery, the guy supported Trump, and people started boycotting the bakery. I mean, that I feel like could potentially, it's good and it's bad. It could drive more divisiveness, you know, everything with Target and Chick-fil-A the past couple of years. I agree voting like for companies that do good or align with your values is important. I want to shout out to the other website. It's called ledbetter.com. They list out companies and their diversity of women and minorities on their boards. So you can also, contribute to further diversification and make that an issue as well. I just fear that we might be driving more divisiveness by boycotting.
Well, if you could, as a small owner, be like, we're inclusive of people, like, we're going to love Trump's hate. You don't even have to say Trump, but if you just want to, I think we should really focus on, we're all the same. Like, we're all connected. We're all in this together, you know?
Yeah.
And even if people didn't vote the way you wanted, it may have come from a place of just, they had the right sentiment and just didn't know how. And that's where the lack of education is. But I don't think fighting hate against hate is what we should be doing. Like, we really need to come from a place of like love and understanding, mm-hmm. and rising above, because that's really all we can do. And it's like, you know, Ghostbusters 2 when that slime came and was making everyone crazy. We had to like fight it, but with love.
Yeah, and go on, Lizzie.
I was just gonna say, I'd be remiss not to shout out a website. For full disclosure, they were a client of mine, but they're also, the founder is in Dreamers and Doers with a couple of us. Issuevoter.org will like give you all of the House bills and let you vote on them. and they'll actually automatically kind of send your opinion over to your rep. But it's great for building awareness around the issues that our reps are voting on now.
That's awesome. Okay, we ran out of time. You guys were amazing. Thank you, everyone, for being here. And find us on Twitter, and you can find those links and stuff. So rock on, everyone. We can do this. Let's harness the powerful energy. I really thank all my guests, and hopefully I still have a show next week. So otherwise, you can listen to it.